Hi, this is Candy Minks in Chicago for the Agency Podcast.
And Eugene Napick in Toronto. And welcome to the Agency. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. I hope everybody is safe and well and staying home right now.
I know. This was a bad week, I think.
It's pretty scary what's happening, particularly throughout America, but here in Canada too, you know, people are dying from this virus.
Yeah. I think New York City was so upsetting with Central Park being, you know, commandeered, which it must be, but it just really hits home, you know, that it's turning into a hospital, and it's sad. It's sad. I hope everybody is going to be able to stay home. And then we found out, of course, that it's for sure another 30 days. Of staying, and then there's numbers like it could be till July.
So yes, it's very possible. It looks like we're canceling or at least postponing the Long Branch Garden Tour this year because we can't really plan for it because we don't know if people are going to be able to, you know, be out and socialize.
Sure, and then I just saw Gay Pride's canceled in Toronto for sure too.
Oh wow!
Yeah, so
well,
it's very sad.
You know, I think all we can do is hunker down and wait it out.
That's true. Keep the good music going and the good food going as best as we possibly can, cooking up our beans and rice. And I know some people have been pretty inventive. Did we hear from anyone about their comfort foods this week or anything?
We have one bit of mail.
Okay.
It's from Vox. I'll read it.
Oh, okay. See, I keep forgetting to check. My mind is kind of screwed up and fucked up from this whole thing.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I think same with all of us.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah.
It's unprecedented, and you know we've never seen anything like it before. So Vox emailed us, "Hello agents, hope all is well with you and yours. To answer your questions, the comfort foods I've sought out were some raisins to put in my oatmeal, so I haven't had a bowl yet.
Oh.
But it's comforting knowing I can have a bowl whenever I want. As I like some color with my coffee, I also picked up a few tins of condensed milk should I come to feel uneasy about going to the local No Frills, or should they be forced to close for a deep cleaning and the training of new staff. However, I rather doubt I will grow uneasy going there, as being a senior, they open an hour early 2 days per week for us and those with physical disabilities.
Okay.
It was me and six others there on Monday.
Wow. That's amazing.
Well, we have
dog lapping.
George has come in for a drink of water. George likes to make a little splash on the podcast. Shopping was never more pleasant at that location. I find time really doesn't require any assistance from me to pass. If I had my druthers, I'd be working on a way to slow it down, not get through it as quickly as possible. In terms of things I'm doing a bit differently because of the virus, I would think just making a few more calls to my brother and a few friends who I suspect are having more difficulty managing the isolation, one of whom goes back to 12, 11 and a half. Oh, and of course, playing Go via the net.
Ooh.
As for how I'm feeling, I would say that in general, it's with my hands. But thanks for asking. No, seriously, I feel fine. I'm not paying what I would consider to be an inordinate amount of time focused on the virus itself. Virology was never a big interest of mine. So beyond having some sense of what is going on, I'm not much interested in the speculation, rumors, and conspiracy theories floating out there. Oh, another change I had not thought about, but I've not been trolling the neo-Nazis and other haters the last 3 weeks, falling behind in my work as a one-person troll farm. I guess seeing all that hatred out there is disheartening, maybe even a bit frightening, so I've avoided subjecting myself to their crap. As well, I'm spending more time in the cemetery these days, as that's where I make my phone calls from. Aside from all the gravestones, it is actually quite a pleasant place, filled with trees, birds, and squirrels. It may not be as pleasant as a park, but at least during a pandemic, they cannot close the cemeteries as non-essential. Anyway, agents, take care out there box.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I like going to cemeteries myself, and I think they're beautiful public spaces. I like how you go there for your phone calls. Wow. That's very, speaking of conspiracies, that's very interesting. What did you say he was eating again? Oh, the canned milk. Yeah, I bought a bunch of tin milk too, condensed milk as well. I got a lot of that. That was one of the first things I bought, actually. Now it's getting more difficult to find, but there was lots of it when I first started shopping.
You know, I rarely
use... It's in my tea right now, sorry.
I rarely use condensed milk here, but in Vietnam, when I visited there, it's de rigueur in coffee. If you're going to have milk in your coffee, it's always sweetened condensed milk.
Right, right. Well, listen, there's something else we should talk about too that's now very obvious to me since we're on video, is your beard is gone.
What happened?
Yeah, it looks good. Fresh face.
I woke up one morning and,
my gosh,
and said, it's time to shave off the beard, which people who know me will know that I've had for quite some time.
What, about 5 years? 4 years?
I don't know. At least since I retired from my job.
Okay.
You know, when I was working for the man, I was doing media work, and it was pretty much required that I look fairly neat and tidy. Mm-hmm. But I think I started growing as big a scraggly a beard as I could on the day I retired, just 'cause it seemed like a reasonable thing to do, and plus it had that. Touch of gray that I kind of liked.
Fair enough. That's good. Well, change is always good too, right? It's nice to mix it up a bit. I've resisted cutting my hair in some weird shape. I've thought about it a few times, and then I thought, you better not do anything. So
Sheila suggested the other day when she saw me without a beard that maybe I dye my hair blue.
Oh,
but I think she was kidding.
I think it's a great idea. Great idea.
Well, who knows? Maybe
yeah,
I will.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for your letter and your email. We really appreciate that. It's very interesting and exciting. And I haven't been to many parks. We've really stayed inside. So I think that's actually something that we're screwing up on. We really should be going out a bit more.
I think you need to get a little bit of fresh air. Now here, the problem was, you know, some people were going to the parks and gathering and using the playground equipment and not taking the pandemic really seriously. Mm-hmm. And the politicians here are doubling down on that, and they've closed the parking lots to the parks. But
yeah.
I mean, people still, you've got to walk and you've got to get some fresh air.
Yeah.
And you know, for a while today, I often have the radio on because here in Canada, the Prime Minister has been coming on daily doing a press conference, and then the premier, and then the mayor, and I usually listen to that stuff in case there's any important updates, but at the same time there's only so much of it really that I can handle, so you know I shut it off at a point during the day and know, play the fiddle or something that has nothing to do with the COVID-19 virus.
Well, just before you Zoomed me, you sent me a message. I was watching the first episode of season 3 of Ozark.
Ah.
Now, are you going into season 3?
Last night, we finished season 3 of Ozark.
Okay, that's great.
So I don't want to discourage you, but I'm probably going to. Here's the thing. Ozark is very, very well done.
Mm-hmm.
It's written by a team of extremely clever writers, and it's well acted, it's well produced, it has more plot twists per minute than probably anything on television. I'm going to say when we started season 3, I could barely remember season 2.
Okay.
I'm also going to say that I'm going to probably forget most of season 3 just as quickly.
Yeah.
So as well done as it is, I found it empty. But mind you, I found Breaking Bad empty as well, in very much the same way. Clever, but so what? And I gave up on Breaking Bad after 2 seasons. And I know I'm one of the few people on the planet who did that. Most people loved it and think that I'm just nuts, and maybe I am.
I guess some characters get under your skin, you know, and some don't, or some lose favor with you. I guess I like Ozark because one thing is that the story overall has all that action and plot and twists, but they resolve things within two or three episodes. So I find that very rewarding, whereas I felt it was not like that in Breaking Bad. There's something that it's very satisfying to see some of the storylines quickly resolved. You know, a terrible stress, then resolve. Terrible stress, then resolve. I'm really enjoying it. I felt a little bit worried tonight when this episode started was, oh no, they're making a decision to go more complicated and not enjoy what they have. And it's very frustrating. I know that's greed and I know that's human nature. It's very frustrating that they made those decisions. I mean, I guess they wouldn't have a show if they didn't.
That's right. The whole thing is to complicate everything as much as possible, as quickly as possible. And just when you think that maybe it's settling down for 2 seconds, they have the big plot twist. Mm-hmm. I've really never seen so many plot twists in in an episode of any show anywhere. Yeah. It's, you know, I'm sure that's the direction the writers have, is keep, you know, keep that plot moving along because the characters are empty.
Well, I guess they're empty. I mean, I think that they're very human too. I think that I don't think it's fake. I think there's a lot of representation of how we live. We do create drama in our lives, and there's the argument of whether it happens to us or whether we create it. And I think there's a lot of choices that we make that create more drama. It's a very strange show. One of the weird things about it is all the animal cruelty. It's very, very hard to watch that much animal cruelty. And every episode, there's like something outrageous. I don't know if I've noticed it in this episode yet, because it's, we just have 5 minutes left. So I'm waiting for something in a second. I think it's because the people are animal cruel to each other too. They're cruel to each other. And so maybe that's symbolic of that kind of human relationships, and it's carried over into the animal life too, and the way people treat animals.
Candy.
Yeah.
We have a little sound problem here.
Okay.
I've been trying to realize what the sound problem is, and I realize I'm not picking you up through my microphone.
Well, that's what I thought we were testing before. Okay.
That's what I thought we were testing as well, but it just seems to get worse. And
all right.
I think we need to fix it. I'm sorry.
All right. So I don't know how to fix it. I think I'll have to start the whole call over or pause or something.
Let's start the call over.
Let me see.
I hate to do this, but I just think we're going to go do all of this and we're going to have nothing. Because I just realized I took off this and I'm hearing you not through my mic.
Right.
Through the computer. I don't know why that is. So just hang on a second. Maybe we can fix it. Let me see if I can figure out what the problem is. It might be my end.
No, I think it's my end. Although my... It says I'm on Yeti and I'm on stereo microphone.
Talk now.
Okay, testing.
All right, I got you now.
You do?
I think we're okay. So what I'm going to do is cut out that little bit and we're just going to continue on in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, talking about Ozark, go.
Okay, we're going to cut out the part where we just talked. Is that right?
Right.
All right, thank you.
Or you know what we'll do is we're not going to cut out the part.
Right, I think we'll better not.
As usual, we're just going to be our usual technical screw-ups.
That's fine. It's okay. I think that'll be okay.
Yeah, it was a setting, and I believe it was the output was coming in through my computer, so I wasn't hearing you through my headphone. Okay. But I think the recording's going to be fine.
All right, good, because I was very worried it was me, because when I started, anyway, I thought I had put it on the original setting. So yeah, I think Ozark is very interesting, and it's timely too, because the whole animal thing with animal cruelty. Of course, I told you that I watched Tiger King, where you're witnessing this animal cruelty, and then these flamboyantly selfish characters. It's weird that I've really put the two storylines together, Ozark and Tiger King. And
we watched an episode, by the way.
Oh, I just did not think that Sheila should watch it.
Well, we did watch one. We got through most of one, and then we just said, well, that's enough. It occurred to me that both the animal rights activist and the guys with the weird haircuts who looked like pro wrestlers running their zoos, they were like the same.
Oh, yeah. You didn't think there was a hero in that, did you?
No, there's no hero. It's like, the poor Tigers, right? Either way, the Tigers are the losers, man.
Totally, totally. And, if you only watch the first episode, I can ruin the second one for you, or the third one.
You can just keep on ruining, because I'm not watching
it. Yeah, because basically what you find out is, I immediately was like, she was as bad as they were. From first episode, I found her super annoying. You find out that she's probably committed a murder. She killed her previous husband.
Oh, dear.
Allegedly, or possibly. Allegedly. Possibly. I don't want to say she did, because that would not be right. But they definitely, he's been missing for a long, long time, and she's remarried. And I guess she inherited his money, or his life insurance policies, whatever. And it gets very, very funny, because the mullet-haired guy writes songs, "Here, Kitty, Kitty," because it's rumored that she fed her former husband to her lions, her tigers. So he writes a whole song. Did you see any of his songs?
I think I saw a bit of him doing some songs.
Oh, yeah.
Even focused on this thing. I just thought, this is like, I'm not going to let this trash suck me in.
Yeah, I
don't see how it could happen, but.
Yeah, I don't think it's trash at all. I think it's one of the greatest documentaries I've ever seen. I think it's absolutely brilliant. And how this guy even managed to get into their world. I mean, this is the thing. If you don't see what kind of people are doing this trafficking, what I would call wildlife trafficking, and they're breeding the animals on their farm, on that land, they're breeding more tigers. It's disgusting. Wow. So I wouldn't have known that if I hadn't watched it. You're not watching it because you think the people are cool. Although I do think they'd make great Halloween costumes. But so it turns out that there's now apparently what I found out last night when I talked to my sister and different people. We did a Zoom thing last night for my sister's birthday, was that they have reopened up the investigation into the missing husband.
Ooh.
Because of this.
Well, that's another second season.
Well, they could be.
I'm sorry to be so cynical, but.
Right. Well, I just thought it was really one of the most profound documentaries. I thought it was really good. But I also do not think that it's not nice to see the tigers in cages. It's very painful. And there's human trafficking going on in it, too. I mean, I couldn't believe every time that goes on, how could there be six episodes? Six sections, but there really is, because the story just kept going and going.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you're there to report for the agency on it, because I'm going to miss the rest of this one.
Yeah, that's all right. Anyway, your instincts were correct. She's just as bad as the rest of them.
Wow. Hey,
She was breeding tigers too. They have all the old film clips. So she's not so innocent. She also bred tigers when she first started out.
Wow. It's just, some people just try to get righteous about doing the same things, I guess.
Correct.
So speaking about foul behavior, mm-hmm. You pointed me a few days ago to a song, and it totally surprised me. Mm-hmm. And that is, old weird Bob Dylan posted mm-hmm. a new song, or a song, we don't know just how new or old mm-hmm. it really is, mm-hmm. on his website and on mm-hmm. Twitter, called Murder Most Foul, a 17-minute song. And man, is it ever compelling, isn't it?
I think it's very compelling. I really thought it was incredible. It blew my mind, and it's really something. Now, why is he doing it now? I don't know. Now, some people argue that it was probably recorded around 2012 or 2013, or in the last 2 years, because of the style of singing, but it's a mystery.
And he's certainly vocally, I mean, it's a recitation more than singing, but he's in good form. His voice is strong. Mm-hmm. I was very surprised, because all he's really offered us in the past few years are tepid covers of Frank Sinatra tunes. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, he's doing, I thought it was called American Songbook. I thought he did covers of some American songbook. And what he does in this song is he seems to inventory from the a different type of American songbook.
Well, for sure. And I know, for instance, a fellow I follow, a music writer who has a blog, Tom Hickey, refers to Bob Dylan as the grand old man of American song. And in a way, he's a guy who's he's recreated himself so many times over the years, but I think that's the latest recreation. Mm. But also, I think of an interview that 60... What was that?
That's my very powerful flashlight over here. So sorry.
There was an interview on 60 Minutes when a few years ago where the interviewer asked him how he wrote all those songs so quickly in the mid-60s. Mm-hmm. And his response was, he doesn't know. But he said, I can't do it now. I could do lots of things well now, mm-hmm. but I can't do that. Mm-hmm. And I think it's as much a mystery to him as it is to us. Right. But he's come out with this one. And for our listeners who haven't heard it, we'll post it on our Facebook page for sure. Mm-hmm. But it's focused around the assassination of John F. Kennedy. I don't think, in my view, it's not a song about the assassination of John F. Kennedy, although it, especially in the first part of it, it quite specifically documents it. But I see it as a guy in an older man looking back at his youth, his formative years, his prime, and it's like a stream of consciousness, rambling stream of consciousness narrative about the pop culture he helped create. And it's full of pop culture references.
Definitely. I would like to add that I read something, I thought it was brilliant, that when we go through trauma, it triggers, and this is true, it triggers past trauma. So I think the reason he's released it now is because of this crisis reminded him of that time period. And maybe he had already written the song, but he decided that it needed to be put out because of this. Yeah. I think it's directly related to the shutdown.
Also, I hadn't thought about this before, but I mean, it was sometime in 63, I believe, that Kennedy was assassinated. And it wasn't very long after, 8 months after that, that Dylan stopped being the folky guy, the socially conscious folky guy, and became the song and dance man, right? Went electric, went rock and roll.
Well, I think that now you've just noticed the song. I would not have known that before, but that is, I'm sure that's exactly why. He had a wake up or something, you know, yeah. Or change.
That's what's occurred to me now is that maybe that triggered that kind of change. Maybe that and pharmaceuticals. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's the song is full of pop culture references, and for people of our vintage, many of those are obvious. We know them. I think there are people who are half our age. May miss a lot of those references, may not even realize their specific references.
Well, I don't think a lot of people would even listen to this song. I don't know why they would, you know? They've got their own songs coming out, unless they decide to go back and they're exploring folk music. I thought that was really interesting when I wrote down a couple of lines, but one was crazy, was after Kennedy was shot, the Beatles are coming, they're going to hold your hand.
Yeah.
And it changes the meaning of the song. So insanely, that it also makes it not just like a boy to a girl song. It makes it I'm going to hold your hand through a crisis.
That's right. We're going to get through by playing this kind of music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's things like that that were really interesting.
Fascinating song. Did you have any other quotes from it? I didn't write any of that down. And the reason that I didn't, I think I did initially when we started corresponding about mm-hmm. it. But, you know, Bob Dylan is notorious for writing things very fast. And then developing them through performance. And I suspect that he probably wrote this in a half an hour. Mm. And so I didn't want to cling to specific lines, although there's lots of very interesting ones, very compelling ones in there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, something that caught my rub-a-dub-dub, it's Murder Most Foul. He referenced that every time he starts it, he changes the line before Murder Most Foul. And he says, don't show your face, and a white-faced clown after the sun goes down, I thought about the famous photo of Kennedy on the autopsy table. And, you know, you've got the blood out of your face. And then Dylan himself became a white face clown.
That's right.
I just thought that had a really reference. I can't help but think that maybe he sees himself or anybody famous as a bit skewered by the public or by, you know, character assassination, if not real assassination. But it's definitely about the trauma of the country after JFK is killed.
He also mentions, I've got blood in my eyes, blood in my ears. And blood in my eyes refers to an old, I think it's a Mississippi Sheik song, I've got blood in my eyes for you. Mm. So that reference was a sexual reference. And it's a song that Dylan recorded as well in the early 90s. Mm. But here it's also a specific Murder Most Foul reference, right? Mm-hmm. I've got blood in my eyes because his brain's been blown out. Mm-hmm.
Goodbye, Charlie. Goodbye, Uncle Sam. I took Charlie as maybe referencing something to do with Vietnam. So goodbye, Charlie. And then Uncle Sam kind of died around that with the Vietnam War. We don't look up to Uncle Sam. Nobody looks up to Uncle Sam anymore.
And he seems to have pinpointed the assassination of Kennedy as the end of something in America.
Yes, yes.
And the beginning of something else. Yes. And he has references like the Antichrist. So, I mean, he's...
Oh, well, absolutely. And I think that's also why he's released the song right now, is that he said when Kennedy, in the song, he says when Kennedy dies, it's the time, it's the coming of the Antichrist. And if that's true, we're like that, if that was just the coming of the Antichrist, then we're living in it now. We're living in that world of the Antichrist now. There was another thing, business is business and it's a murder most foul. Made me think of The Godfather. I also noticed a line, I've been living in a trap, and I thought that was really powerful. I wanted to go back and revisit it. I couldn't find the lyrics yet online. I don't know whether I didn't look properly or what, but I couldn't find them.
Yeah, he's made references similar to that before. I think on the Infidels album, there's a song in which he says that he feels like a statue in the Louvre. You know, his nose itches, but he can't move.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Interesting. So I definitely saw it as an inventory of something, of a change in our culture, a change in American culture. I have a book by Harold Bloom. It's a very, very pretty well-known book called The Invention of the Human. And it's about how Shakespeare invented us, that we are who we are because of the poems of Shakespeare. And they've helped us build our identity. And, I kind of thought of that with this song, that there's an awful lot about suggesting that our identity comes from that time period. Again, back to that trauma, and now we're in trauma again, and it's triggering that for him. Or triggering it enough for him to release the song, whenever he wrote it.
And also, we should say that the song is a very melancholy mood. It's over some violin and piano that just kind of meanders through the song, and Dylan just narrates over this. Mm-hmm. And it's very trance-like. I listened to it a second and a third time, and I found myself drifting away into it. It's fascinating bit of work.
Yes.
And as I said to you, where did it come from? And you said, it was on his Twitter page. Where the hell did it come from? Like, because it came right out of the blue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wasn't expecting anything of that kind of interest or substance mm-hmm. from this guy at this point.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess maybe he knew we're all at home and we'd have 17 minutes to listen to such a long song too. There's that kind of feeling too. I thought this is the time you could actually listen to a 17-minute song. Do you know who the musicians are?
No, I don't. Did you look that up?
I thought that I don't know. I thought it was, I'd heard that it could be, I don't know who it is. Yeah, I'd like to know who's on there.
I assumed it was his touring band, but I don't know.
Yeah, it must be. It must be. And I don't know who that is. So it's got to be his.
Yeah. Who knows? Who knows, yeah. Right?
There's a Wikipedia page already, of course.
Is there really?
Yeah, I don't see a lot on there yet, but.
Oh, so it doesn't have musicians?
It
may not be known.
Yeah. Well, it might have the musicians on there. I haven't got to that part. Critical response.
Oh, and what's the critical response? What do the music mandarins think about this little ditty?
Well, National Public Radio, NPR, described the song as unfolding slowly over a delicate instrumental backing of violin, piano, and hushed percussion. Dylan's voice is rich and expressive as he veers between describing the assassination, the unfolding of the counterculture, and a roll call of musicians, movie lyrics, and other pop culture references, and felt the song was Dylan at his most incisive and cutting. NPR concluded that Murder Most Foul was worth many repeated listens and will occupy any Dylanologist hold up at home. See, the hold up at home. So,
right, yeah. Yeah, I think it's well worth a listen to. So to our listeners out there, we're gonna put it up on our Facebook page.
Yeah.
And I recommend you check it out. It's a fascinating bit of work.
Right. Over 70 songs are referenced in the work.
Wow. Yeah, I figures people would have counted.
Oh yeah.
You know, there's a lot of them. I caught a lot of them as I listened through. Mm-hmm. You know, there's tons of them, you know, from mm-hmm. Wake Up Little Susie to all kinds of them. Mm-hmm. To Blood in My Eyes for You and many, many, many more. And other references as well. And references to there's a reference to Fleetwood Mac, Lindsey Buckingham and
Stevie Nicks.
It's
The Who with Tommy.
Yeah.
Because they talk about the Acid Queen. He talks about the Acid Queen. This is The Guardian says, the song described Kennedy's assassination in stark terms. Imagining Kennedy being led to the slaughter like a sacrificial lamb. They blew off his head while he was still in the car, shot down like a dog in broad daylight. And that Dylan created an epic portrait of America in decline ever since. So
yeah, that's really what he's done with mm-hmm. the song without being explicit about it by going through his own culture, right?
Yeah.
And I think very much the culture he helped yeah. create. It's very much a part of all of that stuff that that he's referencing.
Well, that's what I thought. Goodbye Charlie, goodbye Uncle Sam. That's the time that those two things, it was the end of it. Once Vietnam happened, any idealism about presidents was long gone.
I also thought about the Don McLean song, American Pie, which was also looking at a point in America, a specific point.
I love that song.
Yeah, you know, we went to see Don McLean. Did I tell you that?
No.
We went to see Don McLean a couple of years ago at the CNE band Penn Shell, and a few years ago now. I was really looking forward to it, and he was so bad.
Oh, how?
Well, for starters, he was singing off key. Mm. Like, okay. Really, really off key a lot. Mm. And he did a lot of really weak-ass songs. And maybe it's because he only had two.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe he only had two good songs in him. Like, some people have one novel or one song.
I think his fans might disagree, but yes, I hear what you're saying.
Well, you know, we went there in good faith, but yeah. Man, it was not a good show. Maybe he was having an off night, in fairness to him. Don, if you're out there, I'm sorry to diss you like that, but I mean, the show was not good, my friend.
Right, right. Okay, well, that's fair. I've seen people I love and it sucked. And they're
including old Weird Bob. I mean, I've seen him when he hasn't been all that hot either.
Oh my God.
Although I've seen him when he's been pretty remarkable.
Yeah. Yeah. Trying to see what else should I watch or see this week. I've got my notes for the podcast mixed in with recipes in the kitchen. You know?
Oh, that's okay. Yeah. Hey, have you been doing any pandemic cooking?
I made pizza, and I have not made pizza from scratch from I don't even know when. I've had pizza from scratch, but I haven't made it. So we had pizza the other day. I didn't love it, but Steg loved it.
Well, it's pizza.
I didn't like my dough. Hmm.
I think it's the times call for comfort food.
Yeah.
I made a stir-fried squid and broccoli over rice with deep fried shallots on top. That was pretty boss the other day.
Sounds really good.
And today, you know, Sheila's working from home and she called out a request for soup tonight. So I made everything but the kitchen sink soup tonight.
Wow.
That had kale and carrots and leeks. And I found a dried ancho chili, my last one in the pantry. And I put that in there and it just gave this wonderful body to the soup.
Have you got seeds and everything ready to go?
No, nothing. I was saying to Sheila today, I mean, I haven't even thought about tomato plants this year or anything. But
Are you going to go and get some?
I'll probably try to get some tomato plants. Usually my friend Jennifer, who grows tomato plants each year, gives me some. And I haven't talked to Jennifer, and I don't know if she started her plants. I presume that she did, and maybe there'll be some coming my way. Otherwise, right. I'll be going down to, I'm sure there'll be something open that sells some tomato plants to start.
Yeah, I think I'll get some lettuce or something, you know. Yeah.
Lettuce is good. Anything like that that sprouts up quick and that you know, right. I think it's good to have, especially now when you're trying to avoid stores. Well, and that kind
that's of what I was thinking, that I kind of, I guess, I mean, we couldn't have bought it a couple of weeks ago anyway, but now I guess we could go to a garden supply or something. You know?
I'm finding now when I go to the grocery store, I get very anxious.
Oh, don't even. Me too. I'm so anxious. It's actually horrible. I hope we don't go till next week.
One of the things we discovered here is you go to the ethnic grocery stores. Mm-hmm. Like, we have a big Adonis. I mean, it's a 15-minute drive from here, but Adonis is the Middle Eastern sort of focused store, and it's not nearly so busy as the Loblaws.
Yeah,
so there's a lot more room. They're fully stocked with everything that you would want, whereas the No Frills habitually has nothing, and it's got tons. They're lined up outside to get in the No Frills. I can't handle it.
I know, that's really hard.
I went to the Loblaws the other day. I needed cat litter, and I knew I could get it there. Mm-hmm. And so I went to the Loblaws, and I'd go into a row, and the aisles are so narrow, and there'd be people standing in the aisles, and it's like, oh, God, I got to stay 6 feet away from these people. Mm-hmm. I can't go in this aisle. Mm-hmm. Right? And so I'm walking around the store trying to get into aisles to buy stuff, and it's impossible to do it. I was getting more and more anxious by the whole thing. So, you know, I'm trying to do the right thing. You know, there's so much information, first of all, about this virus and misinformation. And I've decided, for right or wrong, that the thing to do is pay attention to our chief medical officer of health, because you got to decide what's credible. Mm-hmm. So is it going to be the internet, or is it going to be the chief medical officer of health? And I've made the decision, I'm going to listen to the chief medical officer of health. So when she says, do this, I'll do this. When she says, don't do that, I'm going to not do that. Mm-hmm. And so that's been my guideline throughout this.
Right.
You know, and for instance, like she said, you don't need to wear a mask. But now the internet is telling you to wear a mask.
Well, you know, the problem with the mask is, if you touch your mask and take it off at home, you can't reuse it again. It's got to go in the garbage or the laundry. So it's really about touching your face, whether the mask is on or not. I think the mask is probably a very good idea. I haven't worn one, but I think it is a good idea. But you can't take it on and off.
If the medical officer of health tells me to wear one, I will.
Right.
But you know, today I stumbled upon a video. I watch a lot of Go videos because I'm always studying so I can kick Box's butt at Go, which I'm going to say, the last time we played online, it was ugly, man. It was ugly.
Really?
Yeah. I think he just had a bad night, though, and I'm sure he'll have his revenge, but I did very, very well. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I was looking at videos by GoPro Yanu, who's a professional Go player in Korea. And she has some videos about her daily life. So she had a video about going out to the supermarket. The most mundane thing, but during the pandemic.
Mm.
Now, South Korea has done very well in terms of controlling the pandemic. And here's what I'm going to say I saw. A, she's always wearing masks. Mm-hmm. She goes to the pharmacy to get the two masks they're allowed per day. The government mandates everyone gets two masks per day.
Mm-hmm.
And so... is it two? I think it's two. I could have had that wrong. Anyway, she goes to the pharmacy to get her mask for her and her mom. Mm-hmm. And they're lined up at the pharmacy, and nobody is staying 6 feet apart. Mm-hmm. It's a lineup.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not doing the same as they're doing. They've done about as well as could be expected through a pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
What's right? So I don't know, but my head will explode if I don't just listen to the medical officer.
Sure.
So that's what I'm doing.
And like I said, the main issue is that if you're not taking, even if you wear gloves, you have to wash your hands after you take the gloves off. And there's a proper way to take gloves off. There's a proper way to take the mask off.
And a proper way to wash your hands. And, on the national, the buddy on the national was singing a song while he was washing his hands, showing you how to do all of that.
Right.
It just creates anxiety with me. You know, I'm doing my best.
Yeah. I think the worst I felt in the last few weeks was the two times we went out to the store and to the bank. I had to go to the bank. And once I got home, I just had the worst night, worst headaches. Anticipating going to the store is giving me headaches. Yeah. So we're just staying in. We'll just use up the food we have.
So the other night, Sheila found an interesting movie to watch, and maybe it's appropriate when you're stuck inside the house a lot. We watched Escape from Alcatraz.
You know, I watched it too.
Watched it too?
Yeah,
1979 film directed by Don Siegel, who also directed
Charlie Varick,
yes.
Yeah.
Right. It's the last film he did with Clint before Clint decided he needed to direct himself. And they had a big falling out over that. It's a great film. I think it's a great film.
It really is the most beautiful film. It really is beautiful. And talk about Wages of Fear and tension.
Oh, yeah.
Remember our movie Wages of Fear?
Yes.
Yeah, so I thought I had as much tension as that movie did.
Tremendous tension and a lot of sensitivity in showing the isolation of being in prison. Mm-hmm. The sequences, well, first of all, Patrick McGoohan as the sadistic creep of a prison warden. What a great role for Patrick McGoohan. He was a real nasty dude in the film. But what he did to Doc, the guy who painted, he went and looked at his paintings in his cell and then took away his painting privileges. Mm-hmm. And Doc proceeds to chop his own fingers off. Oh, just chilling bit of film. Mm-hmm. Fascinating. And, you know, Sheila looked into it after, because it's based on a true story.
It is based on a true story, yep.
And the Anglin brothers. Mm-hmm. And the official story is that they think they could have got to Angel Island, but they must have drowned when they left Angel Island. But I went to Wikipedia, because Wikipedia knows everything. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to read an entry, if I could.
Good. Yes.
In January 1965, the FBI investigated a rumor that Clarence Anglin was living in Brazil. It was considered so significant that agents were dispatched to South America to find him. A male tipster called the Bureau in 1967, claiming to have been at school with Morris and having known him for 30 years. He said he had bumped into him in Maryland and described him as having a small beard and a mustache, but refused to give further details. Family members of the Anglin brothers occasionally received many unsigned postcards and messages over the years. Once a card came signed Jerry and another Jerry and Joe. The family also produced a Christmas card purportedly received in the family mailbox in 1962 saying, "To Mother from John, Merry Christmas." Another of the Anglin's 11 siblings, Robert, also said that sometimes the phone would ring and all that could be heard was breathing on the other end. Robert said, "I suppose all that could have been pranks, but maybe it was my brothers." The mother of the Anglin brothers received flowers anonymously every Mother's Day until her death in 1973, and two very tall, unusual women in heavy makeup were reported to have attended her funeral before disappearing. Federal officials say that in the mid to late 60s and into the 70s, there were 6 or 7 sightings reported of the Anglin brothers, all in North Florida or Georgia. Robert also said that in 1989, when the father of the Anglin brothers died, two strangers in beards showed up at the funeral home. According to Robert, they stood in front of the casket looking at the body a few minutes. They wept, then they walked out, he said. In 1989, a woman who only identified herself as Kathy called Unsolved Mysteries Tip Line to report that she recognized a photo of Clarence Anglin as a man who lived on a farm near Mariana, Florida. The brothers were also linked to the area by a woman who recognized a photo of Clarence Anglin and said he lived near Mariana. She correctly identified his eye color, height, and other physical features. Another witness identified a sketch of Frank Morris saying it bore a striking resemblance to a man she had seen in the area. In the early 2000s, according to the New York Times bestselling author Frank M. Ahern, the U.S. Marshals received a tip that one of the Anglin brothers was in Brazil. The U.S. Marshals went down to Brazil and got a confirmation from a local bartender that one of the brothers was there. Deputy U.S. Marshal Michael Dyke told NPR in 2009 that he still received leads on a regular basis.
Wow.
So maybe these guys were the only people to escape from Alcatraz, which was, crazily enough, closed a year later.
Well, it was closed partly because I think they helped reveal the conditions. The conditions had been investigated. I think there had been rumors that it was not fair and that it was a cruel warden, I think. The other thing is, one of the reasons they argue that they didn't get away, though, is because there were no cars stolen. There were no robberies done in their style. Yeah, so they would have had to go straight. They would have had to go straight.
And where would they get money to start out? There's a lot of real unknowns.
Yeah. But they'd have to be chumps, just like Henry Hill at the end of Goodfellas. Go straight,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, really. Mm-hmm.
And we know Jack Rabbit Parole. Remember the fellow that was a writer in Canada, part of the Stopwatch Gang, which inspired the robberies in Point Break? He was a junkie, a bank robber, an amazing writer. I loved him. Married to great Canadian poet Susan Musgrave.
Oh, yeah.
And he went back to it.
Yes, he did. Went back, I think, both to heroin and robbery. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it's what you know.
I'm surprised that hasn't been made into a feature mm-hmm, film. Mm-hmm. Because what a story, huh?
Well, I mean, Point Break did take up the idea of those bank robbers. They took their style of robbing. What was it called? The 90 second men or something like that. They only went into a bank for 90 seconds. The Stopwatch Gang.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Point Break took that. It's not about them, but it is weird that there hasn't been a movie about it. A literal movie, whereas Point Break kind of has that.
Hey, you know, I thought one of the stars of Escape from Alcatraz was the mouse.
I love the mouse. The mouse is amazing. Mm-hmm. Mouse was a good actor.
Yes. Yeah, there's a trained mouse. For our listeners, there's a trained mouse in the film.
And there's very strong portrayals by the little bits of people you get to know in the prison.
Oh, yes. That's including really including the guy who wanted to kill the Frank Morris character.
So scary. He was like his stalker in prison.
Yes. And even when he got out of the hole for trying to kill him, the very first thing he did was try to kill him again.
Right, right. Fred Ward is in that.
Yes,
he's one of the guys
is.
That gets out, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Some really good actors and parts.
Yeah, fine film. I'm glad you had a chance to see it as well.
And, definitely.
And I think we can give this one the agency stamp of approval and recommend
Absolutely.
It for our listeners.
Absolutely. Most F. Oh, I have to tell you, I love the other movie you recommended. Absolutely loved it. I'm going to watch it three more times at least.
Uncorked?
Uncorked.
Yes, isn't it delightful?
I love it.
Yes,
so
that
good.
Was due for theatrical release, and it was pulled because of the COVID-19 virus, and then released directly onto Netflix. So I'm glad it got out there somewhere. Mm-hmm. So 2020 is directed by Prentice Penny. And it's a father and son story, I'd say. Mm-hmm. But an unusual one, huh? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very much. It's in Memphis. And it's funny because while we're watching it, the son wants to be a sommelier.
And yes, his father runs a barbecue joint.
Right. And it's funny because he's studying and he goes to these seminars, the son, to study wine and sommelier. And all of a sudden there's a cameo of DeLynn Proctor. Now, I know who it was. I said, oh my God, Steak, it's the black sommelier guy. We had watched a documentary years ago called Psalm. Have you seen that?
No.
Oh,
no, I never would have
so
caught
good.
That reference.
It's
good
so
you.
Good. Well, yeah, Steak was really surprised that I recognized him. He's very distinctive, though. He's got a flashy suit. Anyway, he helped produce that movie.
Oh, very interesting.
Psalm is incredible. You follow five guys. So part of the reason I loved Uncorked was because we'd seen this documentary and his study is exactly what happened in real life in this documentary we watched.
Very, very interesting.
So it was really cool to see that, and what a great idea for a character.
Yes. I like a lot about this film, but one of the things I liked was, you know, the father wanted his son to follow in his footsteps.
I know.
And run the barbecue joint. Mm-hmm. And the son had other ideas, you know, mm-hmm. and the other ideas were outside of his immediate cultural milieu, right? He's a young black man in Memphis, mm-hmm. and there weren't the kind of opportunities really to do things like go to Paris and become a sommelier for many young black men in Memphis.
Well, it took a lot of money. Yeah, it took a lot of money.
Yes, the family had to raise money to,
right,
to
right.
send him. And right. really it was the power of his mom who, mm-hmm. you know, who gave him money and against the wishes of his dad, who had really wanted nothing to do with the son who didn't want to follow with his footsteps, mm-hmm. you know.
Mm-hmm. I love Courtney B. Vance, who plays his father. He's married to Angela Bassett. He's in an old movie I love called Hamburger Hill. It's a Vietnam movie. He's in that movie. He was one of the lawyers in Criminal Intent, Law and Order. He's one of my favorite actors.
He did a great job.
Mm-hmm. And the music's incredible, right?
The music, the soundtrack is so good. And it starts off, it's hip-hop. But, I mean, it goes to other areas, too.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
It's musically, including French hip-hop when he's in Paris.
The musician that did that is Hit-Boy. And he's a producer. He's peers with Jay-Z, he's produced Kanye albums, he's produced Eminem, Beyonce.
Yeah, great job.
Justin Bieber, he's a great musician in his own right. And his soundtrack, I thought about buying it today, actually. I was thinking about getting it.
One of my favorite scenes was, well, Elijah, the son, mm-hmm. worked in a wine store. Mm-hmm. And he's in the wine store and this young woman comes in and she wants a bottle of wine. And he likes the look of this young woman, and he starts to talk to her about the wine, mm-hmm. and he describes the different wines.
Chardonnay is Jay-Z.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And do you remember the others?
Pinot Grigio is Kanye. And Riesling is Drake.
It's Drake. I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah.
It was totally brilliant. And mm-hmm. at the same time, it was so flirtatious. Mm-hmm. Right. And she says she'll sign up for the wine club. Don't you need like my phone number and shit?
Right. Right.
And he's like, oh, yeah, I need to have your phone number. Mm-hmm. It was wonderful, wonderful scene.
It was really beautiful. There were so many layers of relationships in it. I love the supporting cast, the other sommeliers. One of the actors, Matt somebody, he's in my How to Get Away with Murder. He plays Asher in one of my TV shows that I watch with Viola Davis, which I've talked about a number of times on our podcast. So I loved it. I can't wait to watch it again. I think it's my new feel-good movie. There's also a lot of beautiful emotions in it.
Isn't there? Yes.
The boy gives his parents, particularly his father, the son, he goes into the garage one night when his dad's working and brings him a really beautiful bottle of wine. And the father wants nothing to do with it. And he dismisses that. And you know that it's going to come back later on in the story. And what happens is the night before he does his sommelier test, to be a sommelier is just hugely grueling study.
Oh, yeah. You have to be able to get this random glass of wine and identify the wine. It's insane.
It is insane.
It's totally insane. How difficult. I could never do that.
Right. And in the documentary, just like you see in the movie, they have maps of France and they draw and color and they do everything to help. Just like you might do an anatomy coloring book for if you're a doctor. You know those anatomy coloring books? Yeah. So they do the same kind of studies for the wine. And what happens is the day he takes his test, that night they have to wait overnight to get the results. And instead of using the wine to celebrate, they drink the wine to play dominoes and just spend time with each other, whether he passes or not.
That's right. And it really changes that moment, I think, changes their relationship, but doesn't, as it turns out, change his dream. And it was a beautiful film.
Very good.
I'm going to highly recommend it. You're stuck in the house like everybody else. Yeah. It's on Netflix. Even in Canada, it's on Netflix.
Wow.
Just watch it. Uncork. It's a great family movie. Super great.
I wanted to add one more thing that I thought was interesting. I saw it on Oprah magazine, or a review on Oprah's site, was that they said that the story doesn't have the stereotypical trauma of many films about African-American families. And I thought that was very interesting. And
well, it has the death of a parent.
I think what they were referring to was a generational trauma going back hundreds of years.
Oh, I see. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Yes, yes. And I think that's exactly what they meant, that there wasn't suddenly going to be a gang infiltration or any stereotype of what happens to young Black men in United States, feeling like they're not going to live past 30. And I mean, that is hinted at one point.
Well, yes. I mean, and there are kind of hints of that.
Yes.
Part of the cultural history. But at the same time, it's also saying, this is a young Black man who can leave Memphis, can go to Paris, who can seize opportunity, who can be successful within the broader culture. And so it's a very positive and hopeful kind of message, I think.
I think so too. And then the music soundtrack supports that, because of course hip hop was away at basketball and other venues of stereotypical ways to be free of, you know, your past, of ways to go out. The music supported that kind of feeling of doing, you're not going to, you know, the statistic of how many Black men are going to live past the age of 30, you know.
Yeah, and as well, as we said, the music is just great.
It's incredible.
I mean, I'm not a huge hip-hop fan, but I'm going to say I loved this soundtrack. I loved every piece of it. It was just so pinpoint perfect for the drama. Every choice was great.
Yeah, and the storyline is intergenerational again. You could be any age and enjoy this movie, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. And plus, it's got wine and barbecue.
Yeah, awesome.
You know, wine, barbecue, great music, and a fabulous family story.
Mm-hmm, I agree. You know? And I like the scene, sorry, I'm belaboring this, but I love the scenes of them going to get the wood for the barbecue.
Yes.
I love that setting. That was incredible.
Well, yeah, I think it's they talk a little bit about that. I mean, the son sees, at one point, he sees that his father was stuck in the barbecue business. That was his father's. But of course, that isn't his father's view exactly, even though his father wanted to be a teacher and had to help his father and then took over the business. The pride in the business is substantial. And the expertise, you know, when you see him going and buying the wood and getting all the details right for making the Primo barbecue. Well, first of all, I wanted some barbecue in the worst way after watching that film.
I wanted wine and I wanted barbecue so badly. Yeah.
That's it.
Great movie. Great, great movie.
Yes. And it's available in social isolation and social distancing at home on the Netflix machine. You can see it. And it's another film that gets the agency stamp of approval.
Yep, totally. Totally.
So I should say that while I'm recording this, Sheila is watching an art game show.
Oh.
You know, it's like those cooking shows, but it's art.
Oh, I know. I've watched them all.
There's some dude with blue hair, and there's, you know, like.
Is it new?
I have no idea if it's new.
Okay, I need you text me later, please.
All right, I'll find out from Sheila.
We've watched 3 or 4 of them, and I love them. Love them. So I'm assuming this might be a repeat.
It might be. I have really no idea. She probably found it on the Netflix machine.
Oh, they're really good. They're fantastic.
Those sorts of shows, I mean, they suck you right in, right?
Yeah.
But I love them and hate them at the same time.
Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to see if I have any other notes. No, I think I covered what I wanted to about that film. Making terrible noises with my paper. Sorry about that.
Yeah, so you can see, our listeners can see, we do actually have a little bit of research material here. Oh.
And by research, we mean our phones, Google. That's okay, that counts.
But we do actually, hard to believe, we actually do sometimes prepare a little bit for these podcasts, even though sometimes it hardly seems that way.
Yeah.
And so this is the first time we've tried video. And, you know, if the video capture works out okay, we might
do the whole thing.
Yeah, we'll try. We're going to try. Maybe we can put it up on our blogs and people can have the pleasure of watching us as well as listening to us. Yeah. Wow, won't that be special?
Yeah. We'd love to have more emails, more comments on Facebook, anything you are comfortable, you can DM us on Instagram or on Facebook, whatever you like.
Yeah, any which way you want. And if you want to email us, it's theagency.podcast mm-hmm. @gmail.com. Mm-hmm. And we love your emails. And mm-hmm. Email us. We're apt to read your email on the air. Mm-hmm. As well, if you are cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs about this podcast, we do have a Patreon page and we do have some bills to pay. And I would like to thank our super fantastic patrons as we
do
each and every week because, you know, we do this because we love doing it, but it really helps to have a few kroners there to pay the bills because there are
some. It does.
So we really appreciate it. And you too have the opportunity of doing that. Hey, which reminds me, a lot of musicians, now that they can't tour, it's a real problem with this virus and musicians, especially since the recording industry is all shot to hell. Right. And really for many musicians, getting out and touring is the way to earn a living. And well, you can't go out and tour if nobody can go to a show, can you? Mm-hmm. So a lot of musicians have been doing concerts online and setting up Patreon pages and that sort of thing. I watched a great show by a fellow I know the other day, Joe Newberry, did one from his home, and I'm a Joe Newberry Patreon supporter. So support your local musicians if you can too. Remember, you know, they're hardworking, creative people who's right now, they can't apply for government money the way. Here in Canada, there's a lot of people who can't go to their job right now can get some government relief. True. Well, it's tougher for a musician. I don't know what it's like in the United States, but it's pretty tough here in Canada. So if you can watch these concerts, make donations, help out your local musicians, artists, and other creative people, if you can do it, it means a lot to them. And I hope you know, even if you just pick one, pick one musician or artist or whatever that you can support. Pick a podcast, even if it's not ours, that you can support and do what you can to keep those creative juices flowing in the country. It's fantastic.
Definitely. Stay not too anxious.
And stay home.
We're all feeling anxious, so we're sharing that.
And we're gonna be back with you every week throughout this crisis, and hopefully we'll get through it together soon. Yeah. And we'll be back at you next week.
All right. Thank you.
See ya.
Thanks for listening. Bye-bye, Eugene.